Devoncast
from Radio X.
Welcome to Devoncast, your weekly guide to the county's political machinations. Devoncast is brought to you by Radio X and the Local Democracy Reporting Service. I'm Bradley Gerrard and I'm joined today by my colleague Alison Stevenson.
On the podcast today, we're delving deep into the topic of local government reorganisation and devolution. The key phrase is at the centre of the government's plans to change how people and politics interact at local level.
Now, while those two phrases Ali just used might not get the pulses racing particularly fast, even the most ardent political geek, they are immensely important because it is highly likely they will have an impact on the services that all of us rely on that are currently performed by our local councils.
So whether it's bin collections or how long it takes for your child to receive an education, health and care plan, how much parking costs, how much foster placements are available, what help and support is available for vulnerable adults, whether your planning application gets seen too quickly, and those dastardly potholes. Who delivers these, how they do it and where they do it from could all change in the next few years.
Beyond this meaty topic though, we'll also have a piece on train travel and what a South West body is going to be pressing for amid the expected years of delays on the Paddington route due to ongoing HS2 works near the capital.
Now though, let's begin by tackling local government reorganisation and devolution, shall we, Brad?
Go on then, Ali, let's do it.
As we outlined last week, the government released a white paper in mid-December with its ambitions for changing the structure of local councils and how regions are represented. Its desire is for fewer but larger councils, that's the government reorganisation bit, and then for elected mayors to oversee more than one of these larger councils, which is being dubbed as devolution.
Now, for Devon, both represent significant change. In terms of how the government wants councils to be reshaped, it wants the councils to be unitary in style, meaning they'll be responsible for all the services in their area. While both Plymouth and Torbay are already unitary councils, the remainder of Devon uses the so-called two-tier structure. This means that wherever you live in Devon that isn't Plymouth or Torbay, some of your services will be delivered by Devon County Council and others by your local district council.
That two-tier system is effectively what is being swept away by the government and will mean the abolition of county and district councils across England. For us in this county, it means Devon's 11 councils could be reduced to as few as one or potentially four, depending on the prediction you think is most likely. Supportive arguments for this include the suggestion that many people don't know which council performs which service in two-tier areas, so having just one council makes sense. Others claim that these larger organisations would also be more efficient and potentially less costly.
But arguments against larger councils include the suggestion that the voices of smaller communities could be even more overshadowed than they are now, that councillors of these new bigger councils will have far larger and potentially unmanageable workloads, and that residents will have to travel further to attend meetings in person to question their local representatives. And perhaps, inevitably, there is incredulity among critics that money will be saved.
With all that, Brad, you went to a special meeting at East Devon District Council, which was convened purely to discuss this issue.
Yes, Ali, I did. It was a long meeting of around 3 hours, but the headlines came out of it was East Devon's recommendation that Devon should be split into two unitary councils, with Exeter being in one to the east and Plymouth being in one to the west. The council suggested that the Exeter one should include East Devon, Mid Devon, North Devon and Teignbridge. After the meeting, I spoke to the council's leader, Paul Arnott, who's a Liberal Democrat, about the proposal. Now, just to say, we were due to have Paul in as a guest in the studio, and in such a slot, we would speak to him for a bit longer. So this package is longer than our other packages in the podcast, but the reason being is in proxy of him being a guest sat in front of us. So here's my chat with Paul Arnott just after the meeting where they made that recommendation to split Devon into two unitary authorities.
Well, so there has been a lot of discussion already since the white paper on December the 16th, since the target has been set of 500,000 unitaries, how you do it. And there have been lots of discussions already, but they've been sort of behind the scenes, so to speak, because we haven't had time for anything else. We feel that it was worth at least one of the councils who could be involved in that one, and we've already had, the leaders have had chats already, that it's possible. It would be helpful if one of us actually put that out there as a recommendation, as something to aim for.
But why did others not? So you're putting forward a suggestion that it'd be yourself, Mid Devon, North Devon, Exeter and Teignbridge. But why have the other councils, I believe, so far not echoed that?
We've just decided to go ahead and put it out in the public domain. And part of the reason for that, to be absolutely frank, is because although I hugely like and admire Phil Bielik, I mean, we're real colleagues at Exeter. We know that this evening he will have been putting forward the idea for an Exeter-only unitary. We really don't favour that. So what I wanted to do was put out first of all, we'd love to be in with Exeter, and we really would, but it would work with Tonbridge, Mid Devon and North Devon as well. So we just wanted to put that, you know, up the flagpole. There's no certainty around it happening, but at least we're enabled to start talking about it.
But you say it would work and that you don't think Exeter's a good thing, but isn't that sort of, there's political games being played here, isn't there? Because Exeter's a Labour authority, Lib Dem / independent here, so isn't it your sort of political colour looking after itself trying to get Exeter to come with you?
No, because I think what will happen, let's say for sake of argument, Exeter does expand, and I'll give this to Phil Bielik, he thins out the Labour vote if he's not very careful. You could end up with an Exeter, if it tries to get to 250,000, if it encroaches into East Devon, or Tonbridge, or to Mid Devon, that's not favouring him at all. So actually, it should be, you know, if you're cynical about party politics, and I'm really seriously not, if you were a cynical person trying to hack power, we would be saying, yeah, go on, Exeter, you do that, because we can take that over. But I genuinely don't think it's the right thing for the area. I think that...
And it's, but why is that? Is it because you think that, just because it wouldn't meet the 500,000 Angela Rayner target, or...?
Well, first of all, yes, and how many exceptions can the government give? One to Plymouth and one to Exeter. It just makes a mockery of the whole thing and fall apart across the country. But no, because already we work so closely with Exeter. Now, Exeter will say, you know, you live in our travel to work zone. And we would say, well, okay, but if you look at East Devon, for example, in the enterprise zone in the west of the district, the airport and so forth, that's us doing that, and we think it's better to continue collaborating with them on that rather than, oh, it's ours now, Exeter, because they haven't got the experience in doing it. They've got a big city to run. My view, which I've said, is that I believe if Exeter was in a 500,000 unitary with the others, if I were Exeter, and I would totally back this, they should set up their own town council, funnily enough, because they haven't got one, they don't have a town or parish council, they should set up their own very strong council, and they should seek to reserve powers to that council that's on things that concern, you know, the centre of Exeter. Which
so you think Exeter should become like a town council in this larger unitary that you're proposing?
Yeah, and I think what you do then, you know, nobody wants somebody in Axminster or Barnstable deciding whether a major building in central Exeter should be demolished. That would be completely wrong. So I think the ideal here is, you know, Exeter makes itself as strong as possible within the 500,000 unitary. And I think that would work. And honestly, for me, I seriously don't care about the politics. I just don't care. I just feel, as I think it's on record now, that county have tried to, I think...
Well, I was going to say you don't care about the politics, yeah. But politics was raised at this meeting tonight, and it did get a little bit political,
yeah.
And you were sort of not very favourable about what happened at County Hall, which is what essentially happened was that there was a vote in favour of applying to postpone the elections.
Yes, which is so cynical. And there's no defence for it at all.
Well, actually, their defence is that if you try and run an election inducting your councillors,
yeah,
on top of trying to do all of this reorganisation stuff, yeah, it's just not possible.
No, that is utter nonsense, because we run elections. All councils run elections during wars. COVID, some had to be put off. We've run elections here in the most extreme of circumstances when they suddenly occur. So if you look at all those elections after Liz Truss, I mean, I've lost count of how many elections our council had to run, national elections, during times when we had plenty else to do. That thing about there not being enough staff to run elections at county is totally untrue. And I think they should be ashamed of putting that forward. Oh, we're worried about the staff. No, I don't buy that at all. They're looking to cling on to power for an extra year. And there are two reasons for them wanting to do that. One is for the Conservatives, without any democratic mandate, to try and shape what comes next, and they don't have the mandate to do so. And the other is, well, let's just cling on to power for an extra year, and that's what some politicians like to do.
But then most people, lots of people in this chamber tonight, think it's going to take more than a year. So the accusation that it's about clinging on to power for another year doesn't really make much sense, does it? Because what's it going to achieve them being in power for another year? They're still going to be abolished essentially in their current format, the county council.
Well, I mean, I'll come out with the old-fashioned straight thing here. My father fought in the Second World War for the vote, to preserve the vote, and against what's going on here. The kind of arguments put forward in the Devon County Chamber today, people would have been ashamed to say out loud 10 years ago. Cancel an election. Why? I mean, you need the most potent arguments to do that. What we know is the justification for some areas cancelling is if they're good to go in May next year. Devon County Council's idea of a new unitary is nowhere even remotely near that, and they know it. And as we know, and I don't want to criticise the County Council unduly, they're struggling with what they've got on their plate at the moment. And a lot of that is to do with their own party defunding them, and they're not sure what Labour's going to promise them. So there's no justification to cancel the election. They should not be telling government they're ready to go next May when they're not.
I don't think they are telling them that. They're telling them that they want to actively engage in the process, and they're offering, I guess, as an olive branch, this suggestion that they would be willing to postpone the election. They've got to apply for it. They haven't decided it. The government might turn them down.
Yeah, the government could turn down. With this government, although all logic says they should not be in phase one, which is the one that qualifies for people to be to cancel elections, I think it's 50-50. The government don't know what they're doing, and some Whitehall civil servant will go, oh, yeah, that seems like the line of least resistance. Let them get on with it, because we've got enough challenges with Cornwall across the border. So you carry on, Devon, because with the Labour government, we don't actually give a toss. All we care about in the geographic Devon is Plymouth and Exeter, and the rest can go hang. And what you'll have, you've got two alternatives here. You've got the Labour view, which is Plymouth butchering itself up with a few more numbers, Exeter trying to do the same, then what of the rest of us? What is that? That is then an absurd, you know, Axminster to Biddeford to Oakhampton. Why would you do that? How can you possibly govern that?
The big area is your suggestion, I guess, and that, as was raised here a few times, that arguably then potentially might take democratic representation further away from some communities because they'll be further away from the town halls.
I think the other argument that was made tonight really well is that I'm really proud. If you look around our council, it is, and one shouldn't have to say this out loud anymore, there are more women, there are more younger people. In my group, we have had three babies born in the last 18 months. Now, that's not what a council like East Devon used to look like. If you go ahead with something with this mega Devon, you will not find people who can do that job, and will lose them, and it will be back to the same old party hacks, time servers and fossils, which would suit Devon County because that's how they've been since they began.
Well, they have quite a few younger members as well. I think they would probably contend that a little bit. But yeah, you mentioned about reserves and potentially that a government notion behind this whole devolution thing being to, if you combine loads of councils together, you kind of use the collective reserve to kind of basically massage away deficits. Mm. Do you think that's a genuine motivation behind this?
I don't know if it's a motivation, but it's a plain risk. So I don't have the degree of access to know if somebody in Whitehall is discussing that. But if you were in the Treasury, for sake of argument, and you were a bean counter and not somebody who particularly cared about the principles of local democracy, you'd probably look at that and go, well, hang on a minute, these people are sitting on reserves. Well, the reason we have reserves is because they sit behind things like, in our case, 5,500 council homes that we keep going. So that's all pretty critical. You know, those are assets, but those are also publicly owned assets for the common good. They're not there just to be harvested, put in a pot, pay off Devon's debt once. And I feel some sympathy with Devon because, as far as adult and social care is concerned, adult social care, they should have been helped financially a long time ago. But it's a risk. So I can't prove that it will happen. But, you know, normally in life, when you imagine the worst thing that can happen, it does happen.
You've actually got some very senior staff here who have been through major local government reorganisations, been in working for authorities that went unitary. Yeah. are you hoping to harness that experience? Have you had any warnings from them about it?
Yes. So one of the reasons, to go back to an earlier question of yours about why we're trying to show just a couple of extra grams of leadership around starting to suggest active stuff. One of our most senior officers was very intimately involved with the Somerset Unification Unit Tree a few years ago. It's terribly recent. And in fact, she came and worked for us because her district council had closed down. And she's absolutely clear, and she said it to all members, if you do not go in with your own ideas now and you leave it to county, and this happened in Somerset, county will have all sorts of stuff going on behind the scenes with government. They won't tell you until the meeting where they tell you, and it's happened. So that's why I realised when the white paper was published on the 16th of December, we need to get some stuff together right now. We'll hear from government in a letter later this month where they'll ask us our views. I want us to be able to go back and say, we don't just have views, this is something we could do. We're aware Exeter are suggesting this, Plymouth are suggesting this, county are suggesting this, but we as the districts think actually there's a way of creating two Devons and this is what it should look like.
So it's about being proactive, which is part of the rationale that James McInnes, the leader of Devon County Council, gave for his reasons for pursuing their path as well. But you view your actions here tonight as being proactive and therefore having hopefully a bit more control over what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it's very important indeed. And I think the thing with James is I've got a lot of respect for him, and we do get on well, and we will, I said in the meeting, we need to have a team Devon meeting as soon as possible.
Which is where all the councils of Devon come together.
Come together with, Devon are very much chair it and are in control, but it has been very collegiate under John Hart for many years, and I'm sure with James after this week it'll come back like that. And as I said in the debate, we need to do that because we need to understand what each other's assets are, what our responsibilities, liabilities. We need almost to sit in a massive room with a whole load of post-it notes saying we do this, we do this, we do this, so that we can work out the road to working together in however the unitaries end up at the end of the day and make sure nothing gets left out. And that's why I think East Devon can play a leading role, as I said, because we've got senior officers who've taken part in this before. We're very strong on strategy, and we're very strong. We've worked very well. The west of East Devon stuff around the enterprise zone, we've already worked with Devon County and Exeter City on that for years. So there are good relationships, and I wish it hadn't turned political. It has, however, maybe balls have been lanced tonight in various councils or today at Devon County.
That was East Devon District Council leader Paul Arnott speaking to me there about the council's proposal that's put into government to say that Devon should be split into two unitary councils. It's interesting that East Devon has been the only one out of the ones Councillor Arnott named to formally propose that suggestion, but apparently all leaders were aware that East Devon was doing that.
And another key point raised there was the potential for the county council elections, which are planned for May, potentially being delayed. As part of the government's proposals, it offered councils the opportunity to postpone elections if it could be shown that doing so would aid reorganisation and or devolution. And Brad, it was you again who attended Devon's special meeting about this issue. So what happened?
Yes, it was. Lucky me, I had two of these meetings in one day. So in short, from Devon County Council, that council voted in favour of asking the government if it could delay the county council elections as is scheduled for the 1st of May. The vote went broadly along party lines, with all the Conservative councillors present backing the idea and all the Liberal Democrats opposing it, with Labour's four members being split. The vote count was 37 for and 12 against, noting that 10 councillors were absent and the chair doesn't vote in such situations. Again, in short, the arguments put forward in favour of delaying the election relate to the amount of work required to run an election and engage in local government reorganisation simultaneously, and that any new councillors elected would quickly have to go about trying to abolish the very organisation they've just been elected to. But opponents were angry because they thought it showed the Conservatives trying to hold on to power for another year, and suggested that a fresh set of councillors could bring a new perspective to the issue. First, I spoke to Independence Councillor Jess Bailey about her views around the move to delay the county elections.
I think it's a really poor decision by the council to be requesting the elections are cancelled. I think it's high time that all county councillors went to the vote, and I think it's insulting to suggest that newly elected councillors wouldn't be able to take forward devolution.
But wasn't the point from James McInnes more that there's just a lot of work around holding an election, there's a lot of work about inducting new councillors? He wasn't necessarily saying that the people elected would be unable to make decisions about how Devon might be reorganised, more the quantum of work involved in doing the election, doing the post-election, and reorganising local government.
Well, I think it's unrealistic. There's so much division within political circles about the format any devolution deal should take. I think it's completely unrealistic to think there's going to be a readily agreed upon solution within the next couple of months. It feels to me like it's a very divided approach. Team Devon seems to have completely fallen apart.
Team Devon being like a collaboration between all the councils of Devon.
That's right. It doesn't seem to have met at all since the white paper was issued in December. In fact, it sounds as though the county council cancelled the Team Devon meeting. So that's really heading in the wrong direction when we want to be building consensus among all stakeholders across the county.
So part of the rationale for proposing that the elections were postponed was that the council wants to be on the front foot. It wants to say to the government, we've heard what you said, we know it's going to happen, so we're going to do everything we can to do it as fast as possible. You're kind of potentially against that then, and what would your timeline be?
So my timeline would be to let the county council elections go ahead and for the new administration to be the decision maker in the format of the form of devolution. I believe that the Conservative county council, the administration at County Hall, want to cling on to power for their own benefit, for their own political benefit, to dictate and decide and have major influence on the format, when in reality it's a twilight administration. It's failed in numerous ways. It needs to be swept clean, and we need a fresh start here at County Hall and for devolution.
A fresh start maybe you might want, but there was a motion put forward which was agreed that there would be collaboration between all councils. So isn't your point sort of cut off there?
No, I think the Labour amendment was unfortunately fairly meaningless. It won't have any impact. It's warm words that don't actually amount to anything. It won't change anything. The bottom line is that the Conservative-led County Council administration do not want to face the electorate of Devon, and that, in my view, is quite wrong.
That was Councillor Jess Bailey there. And now we'll hear from the Lib Dem leader of Southampton District Council, Julian Brazil.
Well, I'm very disappointed. I think there was an opportunity here now for the elections to go ahead, for members of the public, for the people of Devon to give a clear direction as to how they believe that this reorganisation should go ahead. And what's happened is that their democracy has been denied. You will have councillors who will be deciding on the future of Devon and how it is governed, who have no political mandate to do that whatsoever, no democratic mandate.
But they were elected previously, so the allowance by government allows a year's extra position of councillors if they do what Devon's just decided to do.
Well, absolutely, and I don't agree with it, but you're right, the law of the land allows them to do it. But they were elected for 4 years. This will be going into their fifth year. The reorganisation will not happen immediately. They may have to be around for the next 2-3 years, who knows. It is a dangerous precedent to set when you start cancelling elections when you do not know where you are going. It's more like the behaviour of a third world despot who's cancelling elections just for a grubby way to keep hold on to power.
But the rationale from James McInnes, the leader of Devon County Council, was that he wants to show the government that Devon is willing, that it's listened to the government, it understands the government is going to do this, it is going to reorganise the local government. So why not just say, we're going to move as fast as we can? Why is that a bad thing?
Well, I think because how they've told us to do it, particularly, you know, classic government and devolution, it's not devolution at all. They are mandating us about how we should do it, and we should fight back and say, no, creating mega councils is not the best way to deliver services or democracy in the local rural areas. So we need to have a much more reasoned and debate about that. And that means if we go into this fast track, we will have it done unto us. I mean, and this is what I'm...
But isn't that the opposite, though? Being in the fast track and saying you want to be in the fast track gives you control.
No, if we're in the fast track, we're going to have to do exactly what government tells us. And what we should be doing is standing up and saying, no, we do not think this is the best way to reorganise government. Look, They've only got some ridiculous management consultant who's told them that this is the best way of doing it. They probably don't even know where Devon is. We know that the best way to deliver services and democracy in Devon is to have smaller, more manageable sized unitaries, not these mega councils where remote decisions will be taken by remote politicians that the people have no idea who they are.
So as leader of Southampton, who are you trying to pair up with?
Well, I understand Plymouth have got a meeting this afternoon where they're trying to take most of Southam. So maybe, who knows, maybe I'll be a Plymouth City Councillor by the end of it all.
Councillor Julian Brazil there, who is also a County Councillor for the Kingsbridge Ward, besides his district leadership role. As you heard there, he was very much against the election being delayed. But James McInnes, the Conservative leader of Devon County Council, told me why he was pleased with the outcome of the meeting.
Yes, I am pleased. It was a good balanced debate and I was really pleased about that. And I think it showed that the county councillors, all of them, we all believe in moving forward with local government reform. It's a question of some of us wanting to move quicker than others. I think we need to move as quickly as possible.
But some councillors suggested this was democracy denied. You're delaying an election, which is quite a big deal.
Well, we're asking government to delay. Government will make the decision. We're requesting they delay the election. And we're doing that because we think we need the capacity of experienced councillors who can actually work on this and bring forward plans that were credible for the long-term future of local government in Devon.
But isn't actually what is needed is a set of new minds potentially on this. So if you go through an election, you have new members, you bring new thinking and perspectives to this, which is an issue which, as was mentioned in the chamber several times, previous governments have tried to grapple with reorganising local government and they've left it. So shouldn't there really be a new set of minds in Devon County Council's council chamber to deal with this future reorganisation?
You can always have a new set of minds, but if you talk to anyone who's been through local government reform, they all say you need a stable council full of councillors who have experience, because it's a lot of hard work. And if you have that experience, you bring forward plans that really are credible to government. I don't want to see a situation where we have a county election, Plymouth is busy trying to pinch bits of tall down in South Devon, West Devon, and then in Exeter's trying to get a deal going round East Devon and Mid Devon, and while the county council is going through an election, and then we go through 6 weeks of induction of new members, and then we say, by the way, in about a fortnight's time we're going to be bringing proposals we've got to put in front of government. That is no way to put together a credible argument to government about what the shape of unitary authorities across Devon should be. So that's why we want the county council election postponed. It's nothing to do with running away from democracy. Goodness, I've stood for the election, both West Devon and the county council, about 14 times over the years.
But there's a contention that there's no plan in Devon. You would concede that, surely. So the government paper seems to suggest that areas can delay elections where there is a plan. Devon has no plan. So why have you sought to get the elections delayed?
I think there's a misunderstanding about what your interpretation. When I was on a call with the minister, Baroness Taylor, earlier in the week, she said only councils who want to delay their elections should actually put something in by January the 10th. Put something in to say you want the elections delayed, then you can get down to putting together the plan. The whole purpose of today was to say we haven't made up our minds in Devon about what the solution is. We need to talk to our district councils, we need to talk to our town and parishes, we need to talk to our businesses about what sort of shape unity government will be in the future. But to be able to do that effectively, we need the county council election postponed this year.
But people will say this is just the Conservatives holding on to power for another year. I know you contended that in the chamber, but what do you say to that accusation?
I say that's ridiculous. I would say the Liberal Democrats want the election because they think they're going to have it taken away from them if we don't have it this year. The same with reform, I understand, is issued a national statement saying democracy is being outmaneuvered. Democracy is about making difficult decisions, and I think we've got some really difficult decisions to make about what the shape of unitary government is going to be in Devon, and I want experienced councillors, both Liberal Democrat, Labour, Independent and Conservatives, able to do that, and that's why we've asked the government to defer the election for 12 months.
That was James McInnes there, the leader of Devon County Council.
Now, it's worth reiterating that Devon County Council has asked for permission from the government to delay May's elections, and we won't know the outcome of that application until later this month. And as we understand it at present, it will only be able to delay the election until May 2026.
You're listening to Devoncast, which is available on the Radio X website and app, from your regular podcast provider and on Devoncast Radio, which is on DAB radio across most of the county.
Now we turn to Teignbridge and Tor Bay, where our colleague Guy Henderson was camped out recently to find out the views on local government reorganisation. We'll also start talking a bit more about how that second phrase we mentioned at the start, devolution.
That's right. So devolution in this context is the idea that an elected mayor will cover a so-called strategic authority, which will consist of more than one of the new larger unitary councils we've been describing. Here's Richard Keeling, the Liberal Democrats leader of Teignbridge Council. He is one of the leaders who signed the joint statement we discussed last week, opposing any move towards an overall Devon unitary and objecting to any move to cancel the May County Council elections. During a break in a council meeting, Guy Henderson asked him about his fears for local accountability and democracy.
It sends the message to Devon County Council that we need to all work together to get the best for residents and for the businesses. It's very important that we retain those businesses and go forward from that. So we data analyse exactly what we need to do, look at the benefits, and then decide which unitary or unitaries that we go to.
The prospect of having a unitary that covers the whole of Devon, the whole of Cornwall, people fear that this will take responsibility away from local communities. Do you share that feeling?
Yes, absolutely. Because if you've got just one huge unitary with a council that has to cover between 7,000 and 9,000 people, if you're a resident and you want to give them a call, you're not going to get through. You know, who's going to be your champion? Who's going to speak up for you? It won't be that person. There's also a democracy. You know, you look around here, there's a diverse community of councillors. That won't be the same if you have one unitary. It'll be those that are wealthy enough to become councillors, you know, that have got deep pockets that can do that. And it won't be those diverse councillors that you get now and you see before you, with families, with businesses that work as well. So they're in touch with their communities. Yeah. You know, I used to have a retail shop within my town, and that was the best thing for me, because I became a councillor because I was a councillor before I became a legal voted in councillor, because yeah. I was given advice as people were coming through the door. So you don't want to lose that connectivity of who is my councillor, who can I go to and speak to. With a one unitary, that's going to be very hard to deliver. With two or more, that's easier to deliver. More democracy.
Councillors are meeting now. Devon County Council are meeting as we speak. Tor Bay meets tonight. Other councils are meeting. How do you see this proceeding, and how fast do you see it going?
Right. Devon County Council have been lacklustre in keeping us informed on where they are. But I can tell you I've been in contact with all eight district leaders on a daily basis, including this morning talking with David Thomas, leader of Tor Bay. We are all, it's like a family now of leaders. And this is goes right across the board. It's not just Liberal Democrats. There's five Liberal Democrat leaders, two independent and one Labour up in the city.
Yeah.
You know, and we all get on. You know, we all know what we want to do, and that's to achieve the best for our communities.
So there is quite a unity across Devon at district council and city council level.
Well, if I can be candid, that's probably why the leader at Devon County Council has backtracked from his original position, because we've come out fighting, saying for our residents, this is not the best deal.
That was Richard Keeling, the leader of Teignbridge Council.
Those same concerns about local democracy and knowing who your councillor is came from the district authorities I cover in West Devon, Torridge and North Devon over the past week. Councillors and officers may be thinking they could be out of a job in a year or two, but their minds have clearly been on the possible impact on residents, with unitary councillors having to cover many miles and maybe not as familiar with all the different issues within smaller communities. Here's independent councillor Peter Jones, who covers Witheridge, who talked about his role in trying to secure social housing for local residents before saying this.
Local councillors are able to understand the local issues. They're able to really serve the local communities, and they really care for the local community. What we're talking about doing here is actually moving those pointless politicians, as the government is saying, further away from the people. So those that are most vulnerable, those that are most need, those that are calling us and contacting us, who are they going to reach out to? They're going to have a county, the equivalent of a county councillor and a unitary councillor, is going to have a much bigger area. They're not going to have as much of an understanding of those smaller communities. They're not going to understand the dynamics. They're not going to know the people. They're not going to be able to serve those communities as effectively. The reality is that district councils work really hard. And in my short time as a councillor, I've seen how the councillors and the officers really, really do push to do the absolute best they can to serve the area.
Meanwhile, in Torbay, the council has voted to look into a wide-ranging partnership that covers much of Devon and even straddles the Tamar. Here's Guy again talking to the Conservative leader of Torbay Council, David Thomas, about what could lie ahead.
The vote has gone in favour of exploring a link-up with Devon, Plymouth and Cornwall. That's going to be quite hard to achieve, isn't it?
So that's our strategic ambition. We believe it is the right thing to do. We've been having conversations since a few days after the 16th of December. It's a big decision for Cornwall because their position and where they've been for a single Cornwall. But I do believe that it is the right position for the far southwest peninsula.
How far apart are you? I mean, you're in discussions with Cornwall. The Devon Wall concept, I think we talked about it before quite a long time ago. It's been spoken about, but how far apart are you?
I think that, look, at the end of the day, there's politics that play into the whole of this. And the MPs in Cornwall have a very particular view. And it's this decision, by the way, from government, is it could be made just by the leader of the council. They have said the paperwork says basically we just need a strong commitment from the leader. However, we all took the view that it was not going to be it's probably the biggest decision in local government for more than 50 years, and certainly none of us wanted to just take that decision without at least a conversation. It's bad enough that our community aren't going to be involved. And because of the timescale, and to say, actually, well, you don't even need to consult your council, and furthermore, you don't really need to consult your cabinet. If you don't want to, just let us know. And so we all felt that that was wrong, hence why we've had these meetings pulled together at short order. We've expressed this evening where we want to get to. One thing's for certain, we will not be in the first tranche, because there needed to be a letter going in tomorrow, the 10th of January, from all of the regions that wanted to work together, basically saying we all want to work together. If one said we're not there yet, or they weren't going to be forced to do that. So there is obviously now time to basically continue to explore that. And can we get that across the line?
And that's the case with Cornwall. How have Plymouth responded? Because Plymouth had some resistance to the combined county authority.
I mean, look, I find it's difficult for me to, speak the words of a different leader, yeah? Because I'm not here to do that. But ultimately, I think if Tudor was sat by the side of me, he would say, you know, that the strategic southwest peninsula, i.e. Devon and Cornwall, is of a space that is large enough that should attract a directly elected mayor. You know, it's not our first choice. It really is not our first choice. But as far as I'm concerned, if this is coming down the line, and we spoke a couple of weeks ago, you know, as soon as it came out, you know, we can either get on board and try to shape it the best we can for our residents, because this is for me, this is all about where our residents fit into this. We can either shape it for the best for our residents, or we can literally sit in the corner and say, guys, do what you want, but we know what's going to happen, and we will just be done to, and it could that end up be a single unitary for Devon? Well, quite possibly, but we don't believe I certainly not believe that that is the right way forward.
And when an elected mayor has been mentioned up to now, people have said, oh, we've been down that road before in Torbay. But as has been pointed out tonight, it would be a very different position, wouldn't it, this one?
Yeah, it is very, very different. And it's the kind of powers that are attached with this new elected mayor. You need to think of it as a metro mayor, really, because it is what it is all the powers that the new directly elected mayor would have. These are powers that currently sit with national government, and they would be passed down to that local level. And so the only similarity between, let's say, the elected mayor that we had in Torbay and the directly elected mayor for this much bigger area, the only similarity is M-A-Y-O-R, and everything else is very, very different.
David Thomas there, the leader of Torbay Council, summing up after a lengthy meeting on devolution.
That audio was from our colleague Guy Henderson, who interviewed both Teignbridge Council's Richard Keeling and Torbay's David Thomas. Now, Ali, I think it's your turn with a jaunt down to Plymouth.
Yes, that's right, Brad. So in Plymouth, which became a unitary council in 1998, the idea of a strategic mayoral authority sitting above it for Devon, Cornwall, Plymouth and Torbay, or the South West Peninsula, as they've called it, was also supported. In the words of the Labour Council leader, Tudor Evans, it would give the South West a seat at the top table. With around 1.8 million residents, it would put it on a par with the likes of Greater Manchester and the East and West Midlands and give it a voice it never had before, said Tudor Evans. He said Devon and Cornwall were natural partners, already sharing responsibilities and working together on many things such as defence, crime, the Freeport, National Marine Park and the Tamar Bridge, and it just made sense. The council also voted to extend its boundaries so it could come closer to the 500,000 population that the government has specified for future unitary councils. It would mean taking over areas currently controlled by the South Hams District Council. Here's Councillor Tudor Evans with his thoughts on why he doesn't want to lose Plymouth's unitary status to a wider single Devon council, or any other council for that matter.
Now, those of us in this room who've been about a bit will remember what it was like being in Plymouth up until 1997, being run by Devon. And you will remember the overwhelming endorsement that the people of Plymouth gave us for the right to run our own affairs. And I have to say, I think, with one or two slip-ups along the way, over the last 20-odd years, we've made a pretty good fist of it. So I genuinely believe that Plymouth must continue to run its own affairs. It must continue to run Plymouth and services in Plymouth. But in order to do that, in order to survive, we need to listen to what is being said in the legislation. Now, we've got a tight boundary as a city, right? I mean, literally in Chadderwood, you can see the edge of the housing on one side and empty fields on another. So we know Plymouth is tightly drawn. So this gives us an opportunity to expand our boundaries. In the same way as in 1964, when the then Labour government brought in Plympton and Plimstock into Plymouth to increase its council tax base, or not its council tax base, its rateable value in those days, with a view to having sustainability. So it will be in this episode at this time. So there will be a requirement for us to take on more population in order to make a case, A, for sustainability, and B, I think, in terms of the centre of gravity of Plymouth. There's no doubt about it that we have a particular role to play in the sub-region, and there's no doubt in my mind that that needs to be reflected in our right to continue as a local authority. And so we will need to make a powerful case for our own existence, and a powerful case that will resist any threat to us being put out of business as a council and subsumed into a more rural authority.
Councillor Tudor Evans there, quite adamant that Plymouth should spread its wings as a unitary council.
Still to come on Devoncast, we've got an insight into Exeter MP Steve Race's views on all of this. And then we'll provide you with some light relief as we turn to trains and how local politicians are hoping to improve things amid the potential years of disruption on the Paddington line while HS2 works are undertaken.
Now let's round off the local government reorganisation topic for this week. Radio X's Paul Nero caught up with Exeter Labour MP Steve Race about the repercussions of the devolution deal from the government's point of view. He's excited about the prospects of getting power and decision-making away from London and into the regions.
Now, we're speaking on the day when the government has asked for responses to the devolution bill, which was very different from what we were expecting under the Conservative government. Have we still got those combined authorities that were spoken about under the Conservative? We had £16 million of seed funding into Devon, I think. What continues and what doesn't?
Yeah, I think that's right. So what we'd ended up with a real patchwork under the Tories of different levels of devolution deals all over the place. I thought Devon and Torbay was a pretty poor deal. It was £16 million. I mean, it's not much at all, to be honest. What this devolution deal means is the biggest transfer of power, funding, opportunity and responsibility into regional and local government that we've had in a generation. And I'm really excited about this because I think Exeter currently is a district council. This is our opportunity to get unitary status, to take our seat at the top table of a combined authority across Devon, and I hope including Cornwall as well. So it's a South West Peninsula devolution deal. But getting all that power and decision-making out of London and into our local communities.
Let me just play back what I think you've said. You're in favour of a combined Devon and Cornwall unitary authority, 1.8 million people, presumably run by an elected mayor, which is what Devon County Council asked for yesterday.
Absolutely. I think that the challenges and the opportunities that we have as a Southwest Peninsula actually are pretty similar. You know, when you talk about housing, you talk about transport, you talk about planning, all of these things. We have a combined authority across the Southwest Peninsula, but we also have a really integrated economy as well. And so I would love to have a Southwest Peninsula devolution deal that included Cornwall and Devon. And I really do hope that Cornwall will be able to join in with that.
So let me, again, if I may, just play that back. You're agreeing with the Conservative-controlled Devon County Council about what they want and disagreeing with Labour-controlled Exeter about their appeal for a unitary?
No. What I want is to have Exeter's unitary status brought forward to integrated. So Exeter has control of its own economic footprint. Plymouth would remain as a unitary authority as well, and then either one or two other Devon authorities, and preferably Cornwall. And then overlaid over the top of that would be a strategic authority with a regionally directly elected mayor and a combined authority body that worked alongside them. So I read Devon County Council's paper. I wasn't entirely clear because it didn't say what they wanted. They want to go in the first phase. They want to cancel elections, which I just don't think is a good idea. I think we all need to work together.
It's not cancelling elections, is it? It's postponing for a year, which the Labour government has suggested might be a reasonable thing to do.
It would be a reasonable thing to do if there was agreement on what you wanted to happen and if the authority was in place by next year so you could have elections. I don't think there's an agreement because I don't actually know what... From conversations I've had with Devon County Council, they wanted what they wanted last time, which is to abolish Exeter and just have a very, very big unitary across the entirety of Devon, excluding Plymouth. Just one authority. They can't have that because that wouldn't be a strategic authority. So what we need to get to is an agreement between all the local government leaders, and I would really encourage them to get together to talk about this. But my basic position is that Exeter is a £6 billion economy. It's as big as Plymouth in terms of the size of our economic activity here. Exeter deserves a seat at the top table, and it deserves its own say over its own city and our own growth as well.
You're raising taxes for businesses. You're making it harder. How are you going to fight these people this morning? What are you going to say to reassure them?
I've got a good relationship with the business community in Exeter. I'm always on their side because they're the major employers around here, and we need to make sure that they are successful. Exeter is a successful city. It's growing economically. And my role with government is to make sure that we can do that as much as possible. But it's also about stabilising the finances. We were left with a £22 billion black hole, an economy pretty poorly performing, and we need to make sure that we stabilise the finances. Now, we don't want to raise taxes on working people, so we have raised the national insurance on business payments. That's absolutely right, but we've come off the back of COVID where we had an enormous amount of spending. We need to get our economy back on track, and I'm convinced that this is the plan to do that.
That was Exeter MP Steve Race there on the prospects for devolution.
Now, after all that, just before we move on, Ali, I guess this is going to be an issue that will run for a long, long time. We're going to be covering it a lot. There are so many different facets that are interesting to it, but one thing I want to just pick your brains about briefly was the politics of it all, because you've got a Conservative county council surrounded by a lot of Lib Dem district councils. Then you've got the Labour heartlands of Exeter and Plymouth. And it's going to be interesting how what role politics plays in all this.
It is, yeah. I mean, some have said they should sort of leave party politics at the door, really, because it's about the residents. Now, in Plymouth, obviously Plymouth's an urban council, it's a Labour council. Next door is a Lib Dem council, which is South Hams, and that's the bit that Plymouth is proposing to possibly take over all or part of. And it's a very different area as well. You know, there's a lot more poverty in Plymouth. You know, the South Hams, there's a lot more properties that are in a higher banding council tax. So yeah, there's lots of things to consider there, but I think, you know, it's the politics is going to be quite stormy, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, and that kind of came up in East Devon's meeting as well, and in our interview with Paul Arnott, as listeners will have heard, that Exeter has expressed its hope to remain as a unitary, but there is this 500,000 population figure that the government wants unitary councils to have. Exeter's obviously nowhere near that, and there might be some exceptions allowed, so it might be that smaller growth areas can be unitaries. Yeah. But it would likely be that Exeter would have to expand its administrative footprint somehow, and you've got a Conservative MP for the east of the city and Exmouth. You've got a Lib Dem council in East Devon on its doorstep. So if Labour expands into those areas, it's arguably, an argument could be that it's diluting Labour support. So it's going to be really interesting how these large authorities eventually emerge and then who's in control of them.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? An interesting time for us, I think, anyway.
I think it will be. And yeah, that tussle, I guess, which we'll no doubt talk about in greater depth in future podcasts, between services that residents have been provided, that I think which all councillors in all the councils we've been to have talked about. This has to be about the residents and about delivery to them. But there is that politics, and it can't be ignored, I don't think. But I'm sure we will talk about that in greater depth.
Absolutely. And I think also there's concern over the economic centres, you know, that the small rural councils almost want to be part of a bigger city because that's where all the money's going to come in. If they're left with smaller rural communities, they just won't have the income to sustain them. So it's going to be tricky.
It is, and we'll obviously be covering it closely, keeping an eye on what our councils are doing and bringing it back to this podcast for discussion. So we'll leave that issue of local government reorganisation and devolution there for now, and we will move on now. Finally, it's all aboard the service to Paddington with its delayed departure, delayed arrival and terrible Wi-Fi en route. OK, that might be an overgeneralisation, but it goes to the heart of a problem that could blight Devon's trains to Paddington for years. Works at Old Oak Common in London, linked to the HS2 scheme, will mean that trains travelling to Paddington from the West Country are likely to take longer and be less frequent.
The issue has been raised by the county's MPs in Parliament with calls for more cash to help mitigate the impact of the delays. The government has so far provided a £30 million contingency fund, but as the Liberal Democrat member for Honiton and Sidmouth, Richard Ford, said in the House of Commons, this is a pittance compared to the £6.5 billion cost of the Old Oak Common works, and that the vast majority had already been committed to operational adjustments such as depot changes and electrification in London, with little or no regard for the South West. So what, if anything, can be done to help support services during the potential 7 years of delays? Well, Brad, you might have some answers for our listeners.
Yes, hopefully so. I spoke to Councillor Andrea Davis, whose portfolio within Devon County Council's cabinet includes transport, and who sits on the Peninsula Rail Task Force, a body that brings together councils in the South West. Councillor Davis spoke to me in her capacity as a task force member, and I started by asking her what the latest situation was with the potential delays, and whether she had heard back from Rail Minister Lord Hendy about a prospective meeting.
I'm waiting to hear from the Rail Minister, and yes, we will be meeting sometime when he's available, when I can put the points of concern from residents in the South West about these ongoing works.
And what are those concerns?
So the concerns are is that we'll have a minimum of 7 years of delays getting in and out of Paddington. There'll be reduced capacity, so there'll be less seats available to get to London. And indeed, that sort of ongoing disruption, which really sort of destroys confidence in using public transport, which is the last thing we want to happen.
Well, I guess if people know it's happening, they can mitigate it. And can't they also use the Exeter to Waterloo line?
they can use the Exeter Waterloo line, and indeed we hope that the government instruct the rail companies and Network Rail to make sure that's as resilient as it can be during these works. But I think we're all aware that that is a slower line, and you know, it's about that connectivity and what people are used to. If they're going into Paddington, they want to go to Paddington. We do know that some trains will be going to Euston. So it's about the delay, though. It's about making the journey longer. You know, we've already had a lot of disruption in the last decade with the Elizabeth line works and the electrification. And we'd like to make sure that we're not treated as the area that's just taking the brunt of this again. While we agree with the government's growth plans, we don't think it should be at the expense of residents in the southwest.
But is that avoidable? I mean, this is a huge engineering project. Somebody has to be a victim, as it were, while the works are going on. I mean, what on earth is it that you want to happen to make Devon not suffer impact or disruption, in your view?
So we know it's going to happen. And, you know, as I say, we do support this and we support growth for the United Kingdom. Of course we do. But what we're saying is that we can't change that. But let's make the journey more useful. So we would, one of our biggest asks was going to be, and probably the most prominent one, is about making sure there's sustained, reliable Wi-Fi on each of those trains. We know the technology's there, it's used abroad, it's used in Europe, it's used in America. We just don't have it in this country, although there's British companies that actually produce this technology.
But can Lord Hendy do that? You're sat opposite at the table, let's say, with Lord Hendy, you make that request, you want better Wi-Fi on Devon's trains or the trains from Devon to London. What can he do about that?
Yeah, so he can do that. We have had, in effect, a nationalised rail industry since COVID. So the Department of Transport control what happens, and they can absolutely do that. So they only need to instruct the rail operators to say this is what's going to happen. And they'll be pushing on an open door. I've never yet met a rail operating company that doesn't want to do the best for its passengers. That's why they exist. They're there to do, you know, they want to run efficient rail service, don't they? And they want to encourage more people to use it. They're trying to make a profit. But for us, the general public that are using these trains, it's about being able to use that time that you are on the train, and it will be longer, in the most effective way. So you can actually carry on doing the work that you'd be doing if you were sat in the office. Let's call it the rail office. It would be your rail office. It's just part of your working day.
But won't those people using that rail office be the people paying for it through higher fares, probably?
The fares, I have to say, are prohibitive to a lot of people, yes. Yeah.
And wouldn't they maybe get worse if we had wonderful Wi-Fi? Wouldn't there be the slight paradox of the situation? We'd have wonderful Wi-Fi, but more expensive fares.
I really don't think that's the part of if the fare shouldn't go up. I think it should be part and parcel of getting on the train that you've got decent Wi-Fi. You'd expect to see seats in there, wouldn't you? And you know, you don't just get into a sort of open carriage. So I think that's just part and parcel of it, that we would expect to see that. You know, you'd expect to have heating in there or air conditioning or whatever's going on. There's sort of an expectation. Why shouldn't we have this? You know, what is it about us in the southwest that we don't deserve to have this? We know we're not going to get shorter rail journeys, but I think we should be able to say we want to have a better experience, a more useful experience. It's a long journey. We're not talking about it being an hour. This is a long journey from anywhere in the area that I'm representing.
So you think it is in Lord Hendy's gift to make a change there? Yeah,
I do. I absolutely do. And, you know, every time I've met Lord Hendy, he's been a really reasonable bloke. He wants to see people using public transport. He's passionate about public transport. Yeah, I can't see that he wouldn't think that that was an acceptable idea to help mitigate the effects of what is a major engineering project. Let's not get away from that. It's a major engineering project.
And on the fares, then, will you raise this issue with him? Like in the country, there's obviously a bus fare cap. And yeah, maybe if Devon passengers and Cornwall passengers and other passengers of the southwest are going to see journeys disrupted into Paddington, should they maybe pay a lower fare? Is that something you might raise with him and lobby for?
Yes, I'm very happy to do that. I find the whole fare system completely opaque. I mean, I just have no idea how it comes up. The algorithm I do not understand at all. And we all know it's really expensive to use trains. I think that's a reasonable ask.
Well, is it one you'll make to him?
Yes, I'm very happy to make that to him, yes.
You're happy to, but will you?
Yes, I have. Yes, sorry. Yes, I will. I mean, I can't say that. I don't think that would be as attractive as making, that would be a temporary thing. And that's something they could look at, is making it so that it is more attractive to people to use during these times. It sort of helps you mitigate it in your head, doesn't it? It's a bit cheaper, so I'll use the train. And there's also something about, you can use the fare system to encourage people to use trains that are less busy. What I don't want to see is people stop using rail and never go back to it. That's my biggest fear. Ongoing disruption is people, I can't be doing with that. You know, I'm going to get my car out. And we've got to be realistic. Our road network has not got the capacity. Yeah, that those journeys will be very disruptive for people in cars, but getting them back on the trains would be, I think, more problematic.
We've mentioned the Exeter Waterloo line a few times. Yeah. Isn't that just the obvious alternative if there's a delay on the Waterloo line? Well, are there problems with that line, and are there issues with it that you might raise with Lord Hendy when it is that you meet him?
So I think that all of us in the southwest are aware that the Waterloo line not infrequently has infrastructure issues happen to it. So, yes, I intend to raise with him about making sure that all the maintenance that can be done, that they know needs to be done, is done to try and help keep that one open and running.
That was Councillor Andrea Davis there, who sits on the Peninsular Rail Task Force and oversees transport for Devon County Council's Cabinet.
That's Devoncast for another week, all wrapped up. Thank you for listening, wherever you're listening and whatever you're doing while you listen. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember you can find us on Devoncast Radio on DAB across most of the county. We'll be back next week.
Catch the latest episode of Devoncast every Friday at radiox.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts.